Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Well, thank you very much, President Whitaker. On Monday, President Whitaker emailed that AHS will be considering a proposal to change chapter responsibilities in the policy manual. President Whitaker said, "I want to make this clear. No one on the board wants to eliminate chapters," end quote. But apparently the State Board of AHS wants to make chapters meaningless. She further stated, to comply with sunset recommendations, the AHS Governance Committee was asked to review, update, and recommend policy language that was previously developed by Michael Wade and Voy Coy in collaboration with selected chapter members. Will it satisfy the auditors? We do not know, nor will they tell us in advance of the next sunset review. Will it satisfy the local chapters? To be determined. This will not satisfy the local chapters, because no one at AHS has reached out to my board for consent to alter our charter. I have already protested the removal of AH funds to the SAC board. This was a charter violation because the Southern chapter did not give consent to this unilateral move. President Whitaker told me that the charter does not matter when the Auditor General's office wants something done. That passing of the buck has occurred in every state office I have sought counsel, except the Auditor General's office, which never returned my request for a hearing of the steamrolling of our charter. In this case, no one in government will stand in support of the little guy and gal of subsidiarity. AHS is advertised to the public as all about inclusion. AHS is not inclusive. Otherwise, someone would have reached out to SAC for input and consent on what is to be recommended today. In a recent board meeting, in the minutes, someone at that board meeting stated that the legislature is AHS's biggest customer or most important customer. That is not true. The membership is your most important customer. 2 days ago, I wrote to AHS, are the other chapters' charters being violated by the series of recommendations if approved in a similar way to AHS's revocation of chapter monies that occurred earlier in 2021? The Southern Arizona Chapter's charter states in its revocation section that the charter cannot be amended without the consent of the chapter board. The previous vote by the State Board of AHS to remove monies from our chapter did not receive the SAC board's consent. And thus far, the current proposals have not received our consent as well. The AHS SAC Charter in Section 6, Chapter Board of Directors, Parts E and F, go into detail on the advisory role of SAC toward AHS. This role of SAC advising AHS, along with the more important former task of approving spending projects, is crucial to the chapter's function as watchdogs for the greater agency. I'm not sure this function will be removed, so I am asking for clarification. Is AHS's governance committee simply adding the latest ideas to the legally binding chapter charter? Is the committee adding its ideas to the previously formulated document by the Wade Committee? That committee, which President Whitaker refers to in her email, wrote the following in its findings. Each chapter serves an important advisory role to the state board on issues in its region, and is a key support group for the local certified historical organizations within its geographic region. I am not sure why the chapter presidents have been given the latest governance committee recommendations unless the recommendations comply with the chapter charters, which they do not in the case of the Southern Arizona chapter. The only way the notice conforms to the legalities of SAC's charter is if it has received the consent of the SAC Board of Directors, which it has not. And if it is in accord with the previously drafted Wade Committee's recommendations, which retained the advisory role of SAC, I will most certainly ruminate on all of your perspectives on this matter. End of quote. No one replied to my request for clarification. No one on the state board, none of the chapter presidents, nor the president of the society. No one seems to be interested in maintaining the more subtle laws of the great state of Arizona. I have dealt with this passing the buck and obfuscation since I became president of SAC in early 2021. Who on this board believes they are going to find prominent citizens to represent AHS at community events such as fairs and festivals, or to attend meetings and establish ongoing relationships with local certified museums and historical organizations. We, as the SAC board, couldn't even get AHS to fund adobe stucco repairs on Tucson's hidden jewel, the Sosa Carrillo House. So much for inclusion. Thank you.
Is there any other member of the public who wants to speak to this issue? We haven't had board discussion yet. We will, but I want to make sure that the public gets heard. Is there anybody out there who wants to speak directly to this issue? No one else? Okay. So I'm going to give some background here, and the essence of Craig's unhappiness, dissatisfaction with the direction this board has gone regarding chapters is well taken. And I understand that these kinds of changes are difficult to take, but let me share with you that these are not new. The state has declared to us in meetings with the Auditor General's office and others, they have no interest in our chapters or our charters, no interest in our bylaws until they conflict with state directives, state mandates. So, something happened in 2013 that began to change these chapters before any board action was ever taken. And it set the stage for then what happened in 2015. Now we're talking 8 years ago and 6 years ago. This already was set in place. 8 years ago, the Sunset auditors were very specific and said they wanted chapters out of the fiduciary role of 1107 funds. They were not happy with how the funds were being handled. They were not happy with carryover. And the other thing was there was a significant enough carryover. The money was not being spent consistently spent on projects for the organization. Secondly, in that same finding, they said you either eliminate chapters or you rewrite their role or job description. They gave us two choices. Note that the state charged the state board with those directives, not chapters. State board was obligated to act on that. No action had been taken up until last year. Secondly, it set the stage for the change, the legislative change in how this board was appointed. We went from self-appointed to governor-appointed. It also changed, that one act also changed chapter board representation on the board. And it went to one representative per chapter. This board has 25 openings. It's one of the largest boards in the state. Five of those slots belong to chapters. The rest are either at large or represent counties. So the state had already acted. The state already acted on very key parts of chapters. And Craig is right. These actions rendered big changes in chapters. And no, they did it. They did not bother with Chappie. They did not seek their approval because they didn't need it. So, and he is right. The acts in 2013 eliminated 1107 bonds, also requested rewriting of chapter rules, which we did not act on until many years later. It would have been in everyone's interest to have worked this out at the front end. Secondly, it does greatly affect, as I'm just looking at the Southern Charter, the charters have generally the same language, a little bit different from one chapter to the other. They generally have the same language, but parts 3 and 4 were changed, have direct impact on charters, charter representation of the board. The other thing I want to call attention to is the definition of what a charter could be. It is no longer confined to geographics. State statute said, or it could be any interested group who wants to form a chapter, not confined to the geographics. So, with the guidance from the state saying it is the board's responsibility to adhere to sunset findings, and incidentally, we have had several meetings with the auditors since then, recent meetings, and both on the phone and by Zoom with the entire board. They were unequivocal about recommendations. Recommendations are not optional. They weren't just at your convenience. And the warning was, ignore them at your own risk. You can't afford. The other thing they said, well, you haven't acted on these yet? These have been out there for 8 years. You haven't acted on these? No, we haven't. And there's a reason why we haven't, because we know that this is a sensitive area. We are very aware that this represents not watchdog role, because that language never appears in the charter. That may be how locals feel about it. That watchdog function lies within the state board. So, and that oversight lies within the state board. So the revisions here, and that document that you talk about, Craig, I asked Michael Wade for, because I know he had spent a lot of time on it, and it had never been circulated among the board. Very few people had seen it, and what was circulated was all the documents he sent me, and that is what the governance committee worked with, not edited. Just what he had done to date. So that is how the materials were disseminated. Those documents were written way before me, and why I can't explain really why they weren't circulated or acted on. Partly because this feels like the third rail. This feels like dangerous territory. Except that. This is something that this board has to face. And we don't want to get rid of chapters. But that fiduciary responsibility, anything to do with operations, is off the table. What is left is exactly what Michael Wade wrote. It's largely advisory. And that's where we stand. An advisory role that came out of that committee unanimously and without a lot of debate. So that's where we stand, and now that is what is before us. Does anyone on the governance committee want to speak further to this deliberation I am acting in Kelly Corsett's role because he was unable to make it today. Does anyone else want to speak? Go ahead, Eileen.
I do. Mr. McEwen, just thank you so much for, you know, coming today. Your passion is just magnificent for the Historical Society, for Arizona, for heritage and history. I applaud that. Thank you very much. I'm looking at the website right now, Linda,
yes.
And I don't see anywhere on the Southern Arizona. Am I somehow missing where their bylaws are or their...
I have never seen them posted for any chapter.
Okay, because I'm just kind of like looking, especially at this one, and I don't see them anywhere, so I could read them as part of the governance committee. His statement was well thought out and well planned, and again, I do appreciate that. Thank you. But to be able to judge against what the Sunset Review has said, what our guidelines and what our bylaws are, and the changes that we've made, I don't see anywhere. Do you have that, Mr. McEwen, at all? Oh, my electronic folder. Okay, I am.
Yes, I do.
I just immediately, right away, always go to a website. I apologize so much. I apologize for that. I will go ahead and look at them. And I think we need to address this throughout all of our chapters. If one chapter has a concern, I'm very sure there are other chapters that have a concern, regardless if it was mandated by the state and everything. I think we need our due diligence to be collaborative and call the presidents of each of the chapters to the table and have an open and honest discussion with them. Mr. McEwen, are you aware of what the Sunset Review has said as one of the chapter presidents regarding chapters? Have you been informed of that?
Yes, I have.
Okay. I'm going to suggest, Linda, so that we bring maybe some of the other chapter presidents to the table and be collaborative and discuss and see how we can all work together instead of against each other. There's a lot going on, and I think we all need to work together, not against each other.
Mr. McEwen, that sounds like a reasonable suggestion. But let me ask you, you stated that parts of this, or you suggested part of this is non-negotiable because of the impact it's had on the charter. And the state is saying, yeah, you're right, part of this is non-negotiable. So what do we have left? What can we put on the table for common cause? And what do you think Southern is willing to do? I can't speak for any other chapter, but what do you think Southern is willing to do? If, in fact, these other issues seem to, from your perspective, be non-negotiable.
The non-negotiable part is, I believe, our two entities were part of the same organization. And the charter that we agreed to back in the 1990s called for the consent of altering the charter. So I guess how do we change what was voted on in early 2021 about the 1107 fund? I'm not sure what we can do about that. I don't think HS would be willing to budge on that. However, I, for one, would like to see the advisory role of the chapters remain within the society. Without monies, there is no leverage on that advisory role. However, we would appreciate an input into the society, especially if chapters are to raise funds, promote the society at fairs, at philanthropic organizations, then we're going to need more than the statement that you do what we say.
Craig, let me correct this. When 1107 funds were eliminated, all fundraising responsibilities were also lifted from chapters. They are no longer responsible for raising any funds on our behalf.
I realize that. I know that. I agree with you. I knew that.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine. Again, towards the effort of what Eileen has suggested here, Bruce Gwynn, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. You're part of the governance committee. You are aware of all the changes that have occurred to date. You represent the Yuma chapter. And why don't you just tell us your views?
Well, I'm not sure how much influence we've had on the state as far as what goes on and what doesn't go on. But I can tell you this, that we have been very successful in raising large amounts of money. We didn't do that because we had to, because it was our responsibility. We did it because we needed money to get things done. And I don't see that going away. Okay? What I see from this is a responsibility and a new direction from our chapter. Number one, to get more people involved, number one. Number two, to not necessarily influence what the management from the state does, to let them know what the locals want to see and hear so that we can be successful. And that is part of the advisory part that I think is going to continue on. We have to keep talking back and forth. We have to pay attention to what the state says, or else they'll take away our money, which is still not enough to operate on. So we have to follow that as best we can, but also I think it's important that we attend to our own chapters to be successful. And when I say chapters, our own museums. I have a personal interest in the Sacramento Museum as my grandfather. And I don't plan on seeing it go away. And I plan on being part of it right up until I probably pass on, and I hope my children will take over also. We need to do the best we can with what we have. And so we are having to comply with what the state tells us. They do tell us what we have to do. So we have to listen to that, but we can also have conversations with those. Hang on here. Sorry about that. I'm in a parking lot and a lawnmower just went by. So we have to do what we can to help make it be successful. I don't know about your charter. I have not seen it, and I'm sorry that it doesn't fit what used to be, but nothing is what it used to be. We are a new ballgame right now, and not because I want to, and not because anybody else wants to, because we have to. The 1107 funds were eliminated. Okay, so we don't get those. Well, we'll figure out some way to get this going. And, wow. That's not me. Whatever that is. Okay. So anyway, that's my objective is to take what we have and survive with it and to make it work, to get more people interested, to get more people involved, to enjoy history and to help contribute to our history. I guess that's the best I can say.
One thing, Sunset, we get reviewed every 10 years. Our next one is coming up in about less than 2 years. The paperwork actually gets submitted in about a year from now. But Sunset has to do not with money. That's the legislative part of things. But it has to do with the survival of the agency. They have the power to shut it down. regardless of state allocations.
If I might add on what you said there, just to remind those that were amongst us when that was going on, that we were within a breath of being told that we were going to have a review every 2 years because of the way we had not complied with what they told us. Our leadership did not take care of business, and we did not take care of the things we needed to do then. So they can do that, and we were within a breath of just every 2 years having a sunset review. The hours and the amount of energy put into the sunset review to comply has timed us, and it has crippled us. So all of a sudden we get 10 years, but we have to keep working and we have to keep complying. But we have to learn to work with what is presented to us.
I think the other thing, and I asked Tom to speak as well, is that we were under, so Craig, your frustration with us also reflects the state's frustration with us as a state board. They didn't like our oversight. They didn't particularly care for our control. This was their response to it. We have taken that to heart, and so that is where we stand. We had 20 months of non-stop auditing. 20 months. And it finalized, they accepted some of the remedies that were submitted, but pretty much on, as Bruce said, pretty much with a warning, fix it, because the next time around it will get rougher. All right, Tom Foster.
Linda, just one moment. Yes. Desi has been trying to speak.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I just wanted to jump in. I believe we're still on public comment, so if possible, can we move this discussion to the agenda item and move on with public comment and then circle back to this?
Sure, we can. We can do that. Just to suspend this for now, public comment, and I think, Ms. Groff, you are on for public comment.
Yes, I am, and it's just very, very brief. I've got another meeting to get to, but I just want to welcome all of the board members that I haven't had a chance to meet with. My name is Gwen Grove. I'm a member of the Northern Chapter Board and also a member of the Northern Arizona Pioneers Historical Society, and I just want to welcome you all, and part of it being is that August has always been the month that the State Board comes to Flagstaff and has a meeting. And we haven't done that for a while, for obvious reasons, but it's always been such a great opportunity to share Flagstaff with you and for you to come and have a little bit of a visit. So since we can't do that, I just want to say a few things. Kind of cold up here today, and the recent rains have left us a little bit damp, so it might be better that we're all in a Zoom call. But I do hope you'll come up and visit us in Flagstaff very soon. We hear that there's a refresh of the upstairs exhibit that's going to be wonderful. And you may know that our staff here in Flagstaff has taken part in award-winning exhibits, so I'm sure it's going to be spectacular. Right now, the grounds are open. You can come up and have a picnic underneath the pines as long as they're not getting struck by lightning. You can see the inside of some of the outbuildings and tour the train and the caboose. And also I have to give a big thank you to AHS for working to re-roof those outbuildings up here in Flagstaff and repairing the porch. It was really, really nice. And if you haven't been up here, you should know that the Pioneer Museum sits on Highway 180. This is the highway heading up to the Grand Canyon. And it puts our cute little museum in a great place to attract visitors for all of AHS. So we're really looking forward to being open again and getting the curious travelers in, the local history buffs, as well as all the school groups. If this nasty little COVID thing would mellow out, that would be wonderful. But all of us here in the North, we love our history. We want to share it with you. So please come on up and let us know when you come. We'd like to give you a helping hand around town and know that our virtual door is always open. And thank you.
Gwen, first of all, one of the things that everyone misses is meeting in person. And it, I mean, you know, one of the things that I talked about with staff is the prospect of a strictly social event, somehow getting together socially. And that is still on my mind that I haven't ruled it out, but it isn't clear to me how to do that currently. But when it is, love to do that. One of the favorite things I think the board to do is to travel to the location. Flagstaff happens to be one of our favorites, and it is greatly missed. It is a real sense of loss, I can tell you that. I have a question for you, Gwen, and that is, what do you think about the recent accreditation?
Oh, I think it's wonderful. Several of us were interviewed by the panel, and we feel partially responsible for the sharing of this good news, so I think it's wonderful news for all of us statewide.
Yeah, it really levels the playing field, and I think it was a wonderful thing to have accomplished. First of its kind, first attempt ever, first virtual survey they had ever done. A lot of firsts there, thanks to a lot of support from various locales, that is for sure. Okay. Anybody else for just general comments? Your invitation's been accepted, Gwen. We just don't know when we can go ahead and do it.
Yeah, just let us know if you come up as an individual. Just let staff know and they can contact us and would glad to meet you there and give you a little tour and share some of our personal local stories.
And I think, too, on a smaller scale, that may work as opposed to 25 members of the board and that. Sometime in one-on-one sounds wonderful to me. And we think highly of your daughter, incidentally.
Who's that?
I wonder who she is. And for those of you who don't know, it's Desiree. Okay. Tom Foster. Did you disappear?
I'm sorry.
Okay. I'd like you to speak up, please.
Yes.
Because you are the one-man ombudsman on behalf of HF for the eastern part of the state. You have many, many connections with small museums in that area. And you also run your own museum, and currently, even though the eastern chapter is, for all practical purposes, disbanded and active, still you have that perspective. So would you like to speak to changes in general and what we're proposing, et cetera?
Yeah, thank you, Linda. I would. And one of the things I want to relay back to everyone watching and to the board, if you weren't aware, when the 1107 funds had to be either expended or lost for use, Eastern, myself, in the five chapters, in five counties here, we worked with staff at AHS to develop a small grants program, which we did, and I talked to each of the museums individually on the phone, had response from them. Those grants were actually put out there and submitted back to AHS through Eastern Chapter, and we were able to actually take those funds before they were swept, and give those back to some of the small museums, especially in the middle of COVID. A few $100 makes a big difference. So primarily, we were able to use those funds to help some of the other museums in this system. So Pinal County received funding. Gila County Historical Museum received funding. Funding went to Pleasant Valley and also, I believe, to Graham County. I'm trying to remember. So we were actually able, I think there were two checks there for $1,000, and another check, I think, to Graham for $500 and some in Pleasant Valley. I forget. But, you know, the whole idea there is in the midst of all this, and I can't, you know, with all due respect, I can't imagine that there was no communication during this whole event. Actually between
between the Tucson Group and AHS. We live in the age of communication, and I cannot believe that there were no attempts one way or the other to communicate and sit down and work on this before time ran out. But the museums that were affected by this positively, it was just a nice way to run this out before the funds were swept, and a nice way for AHS to reach out as well as Eastern Chapter. And we look at some new changes here now that things have changed dramatically. Some other ways to not only help the small museums, but again to work with AHS to make things better. I mean, this COVID reality has impacted us all, and I don't think there's anything positive that's come out of this except for the realization that that normal now is new, and there is no new normal. So, yeah, that's all I have. I've gone on long enough. Thanks.
I appreciate this. So, Craig, that gives you the perspective of people who sit on chapters. Something else I'd like you to know is that a previous president of the Southern Chapter, in a formal communication, with the board, wanted to disband Southern Chapter. No one acted on it. Nobody responded to it. But that is interesting. So, and for all practical purposes, I think Central has been inactive largely due to COVID. No pressing business there to do. And so it's an interesting array of responses and where chapters are at. I think Eileen's point is well taken. Health of the chapters. Can we achieve health of chapters, improve the health of chapters, and still comply with sunset review? And I think that remains to be seen, but it does call the need to sit down as a group and just to talk about how to move forward. It may be. Maybe there are impacts. Maybe there are areas where we are unable to compromise given our mandate. But maybe there's a whole lot of other areas to explore. And I think it's worth it. So, my question to the group, the language has been there and created by people who have worked with the chapters previously. The language does comply with, we think it complies with the sunset review. It does reflect a revision and update and expansion of the advisory role. We don't know if it will satisfy them. If they read this, and they won't render an opinion. You submitted this, and they're not going to say what they're going to do about the language. I'll get to you in a minute, Desiree. But that's the language that has remained largely intact since it was created, based on input and collaboration with Southern and Northern Chapter. I don't know what role other chapters even asked to participate, but that's where we stand. Desiree, ask your question.
Not so much a question, but I do think Mr. McEwen brings up a lot of really great points, and if this doesn't need to be decided today, I would say we need to give the governance committee and the chapters some time to work together and talk through this a little bit more. Since the email did just go out this week, I think giving more time to work through some of these details would be the best decision at this point.
I would accept that. Any other input from members of the governance committee? Colleen, Wynn.
I concur with Desiree.
Okay. Linda.
I concur.
Okay. So we can table this. Can I have a motion to table?
Move, we table it.
Okay, second.
Second.
I second. This is Lynn Brown. I'm also on the governance committee, and I think that Eileen has brought up a very good point about the importance of communication with all the chapters. And I concur that we just need more time to, that it should be tabled, and we need more time to investigate and make sure that everybody is included in this decision.
Before any vote is taken, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, and I have a second? For the tabling? Okay. All right. Then it is tabled. But just a reminder to the governance committee.
Linda?
Yes?
If you have a first and a second, you need to vote.
Okay. Can I have a vote? All those in favor of the tabling?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the issue is tabled, and then we will confer, I will confer with Kelly about how does this group continue in under, what circumstances. It is not, like a lot of other things, open-ended. The clock is ticking, and so I think this is a priority for the governance committee to work out. It is not a leisurely pursuit.
Linda?
Yes.
Deborah? I totally support this group getting together and having this full discussion. I would also, I mean, as I think about future plans for Arizona Historical Society, I think it's so important for us to be united and collaborative and really and truly on the same page. And so one of the things that I would also ask that while this group, the governance committee, meets with the chapters to really get some feedback as to how we make this part of our process. What do we do on a regular basis so that there is communication going back and forth between the chapters and the state board?
Ideally, just so you know, Deborah, every chapter is supposed to have a representation in their
right.
They all sit on the executive committee. And so so that representative is in charge of conveying a lot of the
right
routine information.
And I would ask if they feel that is sufficient or if there is a quarterly or a semi-annual or an annual basis in which, you know, we need to maybe do something outside of just their representation.
Yep. I think all that is worthy of discussion. And I will trust the governance committee to bring this forward, but it isn't, I think it is a priority. It's been there for a long time and unattended to, and it's time that we do something about it. Okay, any other comments? If not, we will move on to the next part of the agenda. Summary of current events. Just briefly about the director search. We have more and more names coming in. The next search committee meeting is next Wednesday, 7 p.m. And we have a lot of things to consider. Candidates, all of this has been posted to all the usual venues, all the professional venues, as well as the state. And we're getting a lot of responses. And we'll be talking about narrowing some of those candidates down at the next meeting and some other things as well. So that is all I can say about that for now. But right now the response has been robust. Executive committee or the executive director summary, James.
Linda, the debate, as it were, went on for so long. I think I'll just defer to my report for this month. We've got a lot to cover.
Okay, then, which I think that was intended. I mean, executive director summary. I thought your report would be included under there.
Yes, it is, and that went out. I think it's more important that we hear from the committees that need to report out today.
Did everybody get the executive director's
yes.
leadership? Okay. It's dense. There's a lot of reporting that's in there. Please pay attention to it. Then we will move on to nominating committee. Vance is not here, I take it. Is Vance here?
Vance is not here.
Okay. I thought I had heard that he... Okay. Vance is not yeah. here. But there are other members of the nominating committee. So...
I am.
Deborah and Valerie.
Yeah, and I would ask that James give our report.
Okay.
Well, that report is that the search committee, I'm sorry, the...
nominating.
Oh, there's so many committees right now. The nominating committee met, I don't really remember when, early July, and it contacted all board members to ask for nominations and self-nominations for board officer positions. Also, a member of the committee reached out to each of the sitting board officers to determine if they were interested in running again for their current position or another board position. And based on all of that feedback that was received, a draft slate was put together to be in compliance with the new bylaws, stating that the draft slate had to be presented 60 days in advance. It was done so and initially approved at the July 12th meeting of the Board of Directors, and that slate has been posted since then on the website, and the candidate statements are there, and those have also been circulated, and we will do that again after the final slate is approved today. Currently, the draft slate stands at Linda Whitaker for president, Eileen Snoddy for vice president, Bruce Gwynn for secretary, and Jim Snitzer for treasurer.
Thank you.
And that's it.
Okay, thank you very much. Right now I want to make a call to the public. Is there anyone from the public still on who wants to put forward a name to add to the slate? Either Gwen or Craig, anyone from the public? Hearing none, then I propose that we approve this slate as the final for the annual meeting, to be presented at the annual meeting and voted on.
So I would like to make a motion. I think we need a motion, right? I would like to make a motion that the board approve the final slate as just read. That's all that we just approved the final slate of candidates as presented.
Okay, Sherry Ranty made a motion. Colleen Byron, I have you a second. We're ready for a vote. Linda, do you want a voice vote or a roll call vote?
My voice vote is just fine.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion carries unanimously, Linda.
Okay.
I would point out that if a committee presents, the vote of the committee is for whatever, the slate of candidates, for example, there does not need to be, we don't need to move candidate. Go straight. We're just asking, have you been already been approved by committee, and we need only to do what we just did, was vote.
Okay.
Yeah. We're following the protocol that was approved for the bylaws. So that's why the 60 days, and that's why it feels repetitious, but this is what the bylaws called for. Okay. Sunset Review and Performance Audit. We had one meeting since our last report, and it was all focused on collection management. Rebecca sent a nice document updating the considerable progress that has been made on collection management, which will be a big focus of us moving forward. If the Sunset reviewers were unhappy with other aspects of this agency, let me tell you, they are equally unhappy about our collection management in general. They're going to pay a lot of attention to us, and they warned us about it, but I think that tracking document that was submitted by Rebecca brings us a long way towards satisfying oversight. What they really complained about was oversight or lack of it, and now we have some proof that we have oversight. I'm going to let any further discussion about collections go until the committee reports. All right. Board of Health, status of appointees. Well, in one fell swoop, we got one new person, Desiree. We had a second approved appointment from Flagstaff. His name's Alan Peterson, but he withdrew right at the last minute and opted out. So this has happened before, and it does reflect frustration with the process. I think they lost his fingerprints twice, and it was long and drawn out, and he just says, I need to go on and do some other kinds of things. There'll be other names submitted. We know there are other names in the queue. We don't know who they are. I don't need to know who they are, but they are, we say that there are applicants. James, do you have anything to add to that particular item?
No, that's everything that I know.
Okay, status of committee. Couple of things you ought to know. Tom Rose resigned suddenly last week from the chapter board. He was not renewed for the
presentation. Tom is still on the Northern board. He's just not serving as president.
Got it. Okay. And that's something you guys have to figure out. And who's going to be president next? Okay.
Correct.
That is good. All right. We have a new chair because of Tom's non-renewal with the state board, and that is going to be Denise Bauer. She's now chair of buildings and properties, and I don't know if Denise wants to say anything more about that, but the fact is...
No, I don't.
Go ahead. Anything you want to say, Denise?
No, thank you. Not at this time.
Okay. The other committees remain stable, Desiree is now part of the executive committee and part of the search committee. Okay, treasurer's report, Jim Spitzer.
Let's see. James, do you have the ability to bring up that report?
Please define which one, Jim.
Well, let's see. If you have the one, the comparison of 2021 and 2022, I'd like to bring it up quickly.
Okay, just a minute.
And while James is doing that, especially for you new guys, the finances for the Historical Society are very complicated because they have to follow a lot of state rules. And the real source for all this is the queen of the numbers is Kim, and nobody does it better. And what I try and do is condense Kim's numbers down into something much, much smaller. And the quest is far from over. I'm still trying to come up with better ways to present information to this board to try and get through the complexity. Top level comparison. Here we go. I just want to walk this quickly through the 2021 and getting into the budget. The first thing I'll stop right here. If you look at the upper left hand corner, that $3,195,000. I'm the source for the comment I'm the one that said, the state legislatures are our most important customer. Now, I'll paraphrase George Orwell here. All customers are equal, but some customers are more equal than others. The state legislature provides about 3/4 of our funding and has the ability to shut us down, and that's why I say that they're our most expensive customers. So this block of numbers, again, for you guys that haven't been exposed to this before, that each of those line items relates to an entire page full of numbers in inventory. And so this is just a quick rundown. And we started off the 2021 budget, and that's the year ending in June of 2021. So this budget was actually set up before the full impact of COVID. But we had, you can see the bottom line, is that we get $4 million. $4,069,000 of revenue, and then in the kind of the middle column, that negative $145,000, that's what we call the burn, that we were going to burn through our financial reserves at that rate and end with $1.5 million. And then James, scroll down just a little bit. And now, if you look at these, that top line, I've stripped out two big numbers, and I'll come back to them in a second. But the bottom line, I think we came out pretty close to the budget. Literally amazing. That was not achieved without an awful lot of grief and being down, nine positions. So financially, we came out pretty close to the budget number. Even a little less burn, 29,000, you said, number in the middle of the bottom, 29,000 burning into our capital. And then on top of that, I stripped out, to get to those numbers, that's kind of an operational view, so I stripped out a $1.6 million donation and a $500,000 grant. And because they were just hard for me to deal with, when we mixed it in with the operational kind of. And so the moral of this chunk is we came out pretty close to budget, and on top of that, we got some money in. Now, the bottom numbers, the budget for 2022, we don't have a 2022 budget yet. This is some provisional numbers, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them, but just notice a couple of things. If you go down the left-hand column and you look at those headings, you see membership, which used to be a separate line item, is now going to be included with unrestricted. And so that it'll be merged together. And that's just for reporting. And so we had a bottom line number. You can see in the middle of the burn of $360,193. This is all provisional. We're going to try and a week from now have a more accurate budget. But one of the things for you to note is that I've now quit separating out that $1.6 million and the $500,000. I threw them in there. They're just in the balances. So I'm back. Since they're hidden in the balances, our balance all of a sudden jumped way up between the ending balance up above, which you can barely see there, $1.6 million, and our beginning balance, $3.7 million. That's because I incorporated that. All that money that I've been hiding before, now it's in the balance and we can still focus on operational money. And so let's see, James, first of all, any questions on this so far? I know I'm going fast, but not everybody loves numbers as much as me. So then the next sheet is just a quick look at the top, what I call the top level overview or the view from 30,000 feet. And there's not a lot to say yet. We're only 1 month into the year. James, if you can bring that up. While James has talked about that, I was one of the several driving forces behind this, the Sunset Audit. I took that as they weren't the 10 suggestions, they were the 10 commandments. That was stuff we had to do. The credibility of our organization with the legislature directly influences the funding the legislature is going to send our way, and maybe beyond that, our continued existence. So I want to keep those guys happy. So the top line is just the preliminary budget for 2022, and you see it in there, and I've taken out that membership line, but otherwise it's just like what you just looked at. And then scrolling down where it says budget 2022, again, that's wrong. That's the year to date. Sorry about that. And that's 1 month. And so there's nothing to be said for 1 month except if you look at
President.
If you look down the left-hand column.
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, okay. Somebody's on. If you look down the left-hand column, where grants are, you see that $447,390. That's money that wasn't budgeted that has just come in. All that money in grants, about $407,000 of that, I think, that came in from the COVID funds. So that burn that I was worried about of $360,000 this year was just eliminated. I think it was grant. Let's see, there's somebody that has their phone that needs to mute their computer.
Yeah, I'm looking and I can't find that person to him. I'm sorry.
It could be Pat Logan.
Yeah.
Pat
Logan.
She's muted now.
She's muted.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, so anyway, these are the numbers. Again, for you new guys, last year I put another line down below. That was basically another group of numbers down below. That was the forecast where I thought we'd come out. And, forecasting is an art, not a science, but last year we were very, very focused on the burn rate. How fast, when we first started, we were burning through our money so fast we were going to go out of existence in 2 years. That wasn't really the case. We weren't going to go out of existence, so we would have had to have major triage, like closing one or two of our major museums, and we managed to end the year basically balanced with a lot of sacrifice. And so this year is going to be a year of building our strength back. And we may incur a burn rate this year, but it would be wise for us to do whatever it takes to build our strength back so we can go forward into the future. Again, there's a lot of numbers, and I absolutely encourage everybody to take a look at Kim's reports and just challenge yourself to see, you know, take one of her pages, like her page on unrestricted, and see where I'm picking these numbers off to put on this simplified chart. And then if anyone has any suggestions about how better to present this data to the board, my goal is to give you stuff that is short and not, it's not sweet usually, but short and understandable and can support you in taking your action. So any questions? Okay, well then thank you much. That's what I have.
And we just called attention to the board because we're waiting for that final budget to be compiled. There's going to be a special board meeting on the 27th to vote because we're required to vote and approve of that budget. So heads up, I think, James, it's at noontime?
That's correct. So it will be an 11 a.m. Finance Committee meeting followed by a noon board meeting.
Excellent. So heads up, everybody. It will be very brief, but it's absolutely critical that we approve this because we have a that gets posted, that has to be posted no later than August 30th, I believe. Am I right on that?
August 31st, and actually, this is a good time to make a plug. We only have seven board members committed to the meeting next Friday. We need at least 13 in order to have a quorum to vote.
So heads up, sign up. Make it brief. It won't be long. Our only item would be to approve this budget. And once it gets vetted through the finance committee, we know that that committee is very thorough, and I think we can trust their recommendation. Okay, anything else to be said about that, Jim? Did we cover it?
Nope, that's it. What you will see at that meeting will be the page you just looked at. with the revised budget numbers, it'll look a whole lot like what you just saw a minute ago, except the numbers at the top may change up or down, left and right, but at least it'll be something you've seen before.
All credit to you and the financial staff for everything you have done over the last 14 months or more. It has been a trial for everyone, but you have seen, you've been able to, go ahead.
Yeah.
And he came with his friend who purchased something.
Hang on, this is just a lot of people to manage today. Hang on. There we go. Okay.
So, Jim, what I'm saying is, and to thank you on behalf of everything you and your committee has done for us, and the fact that, you have committee members that represent all parts of the state, and they're all experts in financial management. So, congratulations to you and to your committee.
Well, I appreciate the praise. Thank you for that, and thank you for my committee. But the numbers, we just reported the numbers. The results were made to happen by our staff people and James. So that's where the credit really belongs.
I would agree. Kudos there. Okay, committee reports, moving right along. Tom Foster, talk to us about, we have circulated both, I think, your minutes and your recommendations for grants for fiscal year 21-2022.
Thank you, Linda.
Go ahead.
All right. So the Outreach Committee met via Zoom August 13th from 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So a little after 3, the committee reviewed 27 grants. Three of those grants were not funded. And I can go over those quickly here. The Arizona Military Museum did not fit into the grant criteria or guidelines. Pinal County did not fit, again, into the criteria and guidelines. Scottsdale Historical Society did not file a final report, and so they were ineligible for grant funds. So the total amount requested was $45,861.10. I don't know where the 10 cents came from. Total amount approved was 38,000 even. We had some really, actually the quality of the grant submissions for this session really impressed me. They've improved significantly over the past 2 years. The handwritten grants have been eliminated. Everything is electronic. But the time and effort and thought of putting into these grant requests has really improved significantly. And I think a lot of that has to do with DHS and a little bit with our committee working forward. We also had the opportunity to welcome a new committee member. So Sherry Rampey is now on our committee, and I really appreciated her participation. Very nicely done, Sherry. So welcome aboard.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed it tremendously. I enjoyed reading the grants. They were really, like you said, they were really high quality and very interesting, and I've got a lot more places that I have to go visit now in Arizona.
So this gives you an idea of what this committee reads through. These are all of the grants. So it's really significant, and it does have a positive effect on AHS. One of the things I want to add here, upon approval of these grants, we'd like to invite any of the board members that are here. If you would like, these checks need to be presented to these different institutions, to the different museums. So if you would like to take part in some of that, we can give you one or two or three different museums to actually go in person and present these checks. I have a couple in mind now. Last cycle, I think I presented 3 checks, I believe it was, to different museums. And that went over quite well. especially Stephanie Joyner had mentioned that in one of our interviews with the Sunset Review Committee, how much she appreciated Arizona Historical Society taking the time to actually physically show up, congratulate them, and hand in their event check. That, I think, is really, as Dr. Burns would say, I think this is really golden. So I think that's it. You have all the information in your packets, so you can actually see those museums that were approved and the three that weren't. So I'm not sure if anything
we need
else
to vote? And
yes. Looks
like, okay. So why don't you state your motion?
Oh, okay. So the motion is that the grants that were reviewed and approved be approved by the full board moving forward so the checks can be issued.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor, say
aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, your list as submitted has been approved. Next,
thank you.
Library archives collection.
Linda, sorry. If I could have just one second, in regard to the checks, if any of the board members would like to hand deliver the checks after you review the list of awardees, please let me know as soon as possible, because once those checks are submitted for payment, we need to know whether to send it directly to the recipient or if it should come back to us so we can disseminate it to the appropriate board member for hand delivery. So I just need to know that in a fairly quick, like within the next week, because we're going to be issuing contracts and then we'll be getting those checks in process here very soon.
So you're saying board members, review the list. Is there anybody on there that you want to deliver a check to? And then let Tom know.
Correct. Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
You bet.
All right. Library Archives Collection Committee, Greg Stott and Rebecca, take it away because you have a lot to report.
Yes. Rebecca, are you there? No, Rebecca. Well, I just talked to her an hour ago and she said she was going to join us.
She was. She was on it. She has been there. I saw her.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think she could not stay. So that leaves you, Greg.
Looks like Rebecca's having some audio issues. Too bad.
Is Rebecca there?
Well, she's having some audio trouble. Perhaps we could skip to the building.
What I want to do, I will.
Can you hang out?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
All right. There we go.
All right.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay,
sorry. My headset cut out. So I guess well, I'll give you all a little bit of background. A couple weeks ago, I was approached by Mike Conway from the University of Arizona in regards to records that formerly resided with the Arizona Department of Mines, Minerals, and Resources. That agency was disbanded in 2011, and those records were turned over to the Arizona Geological Survey, and then those records were then subsumed under the University of Arizona. They have been in storage since 2011, unused. And so those records have been offered to the Arizona Historical Society. When I say records, these are not going to be one or two folders. This is a very significant collection historically and significant collection size-wise, scope-wise. So what this represents is 65 five-drawer filing cabinets. To give you a sense, that is, on Mike's estimate, about 13,500 folders of mining records and 7,500 photographs that represent six different collections. These are all original materials. These materials represent from the 1940s to 2010, right before the Department of Mines was shut down. Everything has been organized, foldered, labeled. In fact, a former intern of ours was the one that went to go work for the Department of Mines and process the collection. So it will be coming to us pretty much ready to go. And so that's what I took to committee, and I can answer any questions if anybody has any of them about the collection itself.
Just tell us where this is going to be stored. where sure. this will end up.
Sure. So the collection will be stored in Tucson. That makes sense for lots of reasons. One, they have the space for it. Two, that's where we will get a lot of those requests. And three, there's a lot of complementary collections already in Tucson that will help this collection, and this collection will help complement things that we already have. One of the significant parts of the Department of Mines repository is the cells collection. That was a split collection, so we have the other half of cells materials. He was a mining engineer, and so this will be reuniting those materials together.
The other thing is to tell everybody the global importance of this collection and what it means to the state of Arizona.
Sure. So when the Department of Mines closed, we experienced firsthand what that impact was to not only Arizona researchers, but international researchers. So the mining industry, this is a $1 billion industry. So when you have mining companies from Mexico, mining companies from Australia, from Canada, from Germany, that want to come here to Arizona to mine resources, these are not small enterprises and these are not small initiatives. But in order to do that work and get their permit, they have to do the historical research and the geological and geographical data research, the historical research. So they need access to these files to complete that work. And the people that do that kind of work, like I said, it's big business. They have the money to pay us for photocopies. They have the money to pay us for research hours. So it can be a return on investment. There is the possibility for revenue generation through this collection.
Yes. Are there any questions for me, Rebecca? I'll just give a quick report on our committee meeting. The Library Collections Committee held a full meeting. Rebecca gave a bit more comprehensive report and showed us that we've actually had two meetings on this subject. And time is of the essence. This stuff nobody else, the Geologic Survey, the Special Collections at the University, it doesn't seem like anybody wanted this material, and it's invaluable, and will make Arizona Historical Society Library very, very important. I was talking to many of you. I know John Lacey was a former president of the board and a longtime board member. And John, we were talking about something else, and he asked me about that. He said he had used that his company does legal work in Arizona for these international and national companies doing in mine research. And he said personally he had used this exact same collection countless times, that it was invaluable, and that since his firm is located in Tucson, they couldn't wait to get it. It'll take a while to make it accessible to the public, but to get it into our possession, our being Arizona Historical Society. So our board was, collections board was unanimous in recommending to this board, the entire board, that we accept this collection, and there'll be some effort in moving it from point A to point B, but soon it will be residing. Our hope is to be at the museum in Tucson. Are there any questions for me or for Rebecca?
So the reason we're voting for this, everybody, is that this is of such a significance, and it's so big. This has impact on the organization, and that's why it's being brought before you, and it needs sort of the gravitas of a vote from this
exactly.
board.
Exactly.
Sorry, my little hand button isn't working, but I just wanted to say I think this is a fabulous opportunity, and to congratulate Rebecca and both Gregory Stowe. I just think it's wonderful. I'm happy to make a motion to accept the
Wait. Perhaps just because I know Greg is going to bring this up again. There's already a recommendation from a committee. It was unanimous. So all you guys need to do is vote on it.
Okay.
Okay. Yes, I do appreciate it, though, and I appreciate the kind words. And as I said in our committee meeting, I said, Rebecca has done all the heavy lifting. And she says, you don't even know heavy lifting until 65 drawer crates showed us a picture of it. I thought, aye, aye, aye. I think that's when I'm going to call in sick when that's when they move that puppy or call U-Haul or somebody. I don't know, Beacon.
So all those in favor, all those in favor, we'll go right to a vote. All those in favor, voice vote. Say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing none, this treasure trove now becomes ours.
And just to make clear, something that Greg said, once the materials are moved to Tucson physically, then they are open to the public. So there will be no downtime once they are physically moved. So we'll probably be putting out some press releases related to this and some media. But once we receive the boxes, then you can come and look at them.
And this is a very big deal because they've been in hiding and in high demand for so long. This is a very big deal. Congratulations to everyone. Lastly, properties and buildings. Do we have a report? Denise, is there anything you want to say about property and buildings? Is Denise still here?
I guess it would help if I unmuted myself. Yes, we had a meeting back on the 8th of August, and we discussed things that are ongoing. We had Eric's been working a lot with ADOA and trying to get us set up with them. It's a new thing for us. We're working with the state with our facilities. And some of that's been very interesting. I don't have it here right here with me. Yeah. In his notes, he doesn't do minutes. He has everything that he's been doing, and I'm exhausted by just looking over it. So they were doing some work with the downtown museum and trying to get everything moved out of there and appropriately, and also a lot of work on the chillers and trying to protect everybody's collection. So I think that's about what I'm going to wrap up now until I get with Eric again.
And this is Rick Powers. Just to follow on to that, on our meeting, we did discuss getting with Eric and meeting as a committee and going to bigger facilities. So we are planning to do that and come up with a schedule for that. I think we're going to meet, I think it's September the 10th down in Tempe. And I think we're going to try to get with James on that. Is that correct, Denise?
Yes, that's correct.
So we'll look forward to meeting with you hopefully on the 10th down there in Tempe, James, with Eric and our committee.
Unfortunately, you won't see me, but Eric will be there, and I could see if Bill can join as well.
Okay, good.
I think this is a very important initiative. You can hardly manage property and buildings without seeing them in person. This will take time, but I think you'll find it interesting and well worthwhile. So, good on you guys.
I can actually give a couple of other quick updates since in lieu of my report, because you guys might have missed last night. I did get Eric's report, and so it happens to be fresh in my mind, the stuff that's been accomplished, and largely because I've seen a bunch of it in person. So all of the work done at Pioneer is so thrilling to see the new roofs and the other bits of wood that had been rotting on those buildings have all been repaired. I think they had a little bit of staining left to do, but the day that they finished that work, we had a massive monsoon up here, and we were able to confirm that there was only one tiny leak. The roofing company was very responsive and came out and fixed it the very next day. Also, the roof at the Sanguinetti House Museum has also been replaced. So far, so good with that, although we may have to wait till the winter rains to have a full test of that. There is pending a civil engineering report both on the Arizona History Museum courtyard and on aspects of the Social Korea House. Eric has been amazing in terms of marshaling resources to get things done there at Sosa Carrillo. And I understand, Denise, that he's been down to visit with folks in Douglas, which is great. I love that they are a light is continuing to be shown on that wonderful property. As with Strawberry, I think Eric's also been up in Strawberry to meet with Margaret Parker recently. And then we've got a couple of lingering projects at the Heritage Center, one electrical related and one relating to the new split AC units in the pavilion, which are not quite able to keep up with the heat in there. So stay tuned on that. And don't ask me why I have all the facility stuff memorized. I just do.
Okay, thank you for that. Lastly, for the good of the order, any announcements? Anything you want said here? Anybody? None? For the good of the order? Nothing? Going? Gone. All right. Yes? Did I hear someone?
Nope.
Okay. All right. With that, I will call this meeting adjourned. Beware, 1 week from now, we need a quick meeting at noontime to approve the budget, and we need a quorum to do that. Okay. With that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you. Okay.